Sticking to New Year's resolutions can be overwhelming. That's why it's best to set easy, attainable goals. Start with staying hydrated with Brita. The Brita Elite filter makes tap water taste great and safer to drink, too. Brita Elite removes 99% of lead from your water and reduces other contaminants, so you'll actually want to drink it. Raise a glass of water to your 2025 hydration goals. Pick up a Brita pitcher with Elite filter today. 99% of lead certified by WQA. Substances reduced may not be in all users' water.
Go Loud. Talking Bollocks with FBT Gyms. Unleash your potential at FBT Gyms, where strength meets community. FBTGyms.ie.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.
This episode contains references to binge eating and other eating disorders. Please take care while listening. If you can relate to Carla's story of disordered eating, you can get help by visiting bodywise.ie. That's bodywise.ie. Or calling their helpline on 01-210-7906.
What you waiting for? Put your back in it. Just a little more. Throw your weight in the ground. Till your body okay. Walk it hard and slow. When you finish that.
The hip knocker.
Episode 201 of Talking Bollocks podcast, brought to you by Go Loud and sponsored by FBT Gyms. All gyms offer huge gym floors, so you won't be struggling for a bench on a Monday night.
FBT are Hyrox affiliated and have a heated vault, offering free classes in both.
Recharge and recover after a big session in the recovery rooms.
Whether you're a beginner or a seasoned athlete, FBT provide the resources, motivation and expertise to empower your fitness journey.
Unleash your potential at FBT Gyms for only €44 per month with no contract, full class access and locations in Swords, Coolock, Drogheda and now Talla. Sign up today at fbtgyms.ie. It's me, COB.
It's me, Tardy Flower.
And today we're joined by...
Carla Pierre Fitzgerald.
Oh, the Pierre.
Whoa.
We have to have the Pierre. My dad wanted that, so.
She wanted
for
the
his
whole,
honor.
Whole government name was in there.
Capital G as well, Fitzgerald.
Oh.
Difference between donkey farmers and horse farmers, so...
And I thought I was good putting the little apostrophe in between the O and the B and O'Brien.
Yeah. Come here, how's things? How are you keeping?
I'm really good. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me, lads.
You're at the end of the new podcast with Go Loud.
I did.
But that's not the reason why you're in here. I have to be honest with you, I never heard your story or anything before.
Great.
Until you came to Go Loud, and then I was like, right, fuck me. She is going to be a great guest.
Aww.
Your story is incredible. Do you want to just give us a quick snippet of where you were in terms of weight-wise, the way you are now?
Okay, so I used to be 23 stone or 147 kg, depending on which one you use, 323.8 pounds. And yeah.
Whoa.
So, and then I lost 13 stone or over half my body weight, and I'm somewhere around the 10 stone mark, the late 60s in kg. So yeah, 13 stone. So I probably lost one of you lads and a bit more.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah.
So in kilo, what's 10 stone in kilo then?
66.6.
Fucking hell. That is.
So if like I lost 83 kg.
Like that's more than you.
Yeah. No, it's not. I weighed myself today. Don't bring her up. That is absolutely amazing.
Thank you.
Honestly, and I don't want to sound like an asshole, but it's still January. Like, if you're looking for inspiration, like if people are looking for any sort of inspiration, like, your story is amazing. And it's not true I was Ozempic, you said.
No, nor surgery.
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler.
You're very clear about that.
No, Ozempic. I didn't even know what Ozempic was until like last year or the year before. So I started my weight loss in January 2020, just before lockdown. And then I emerged from lockdown 14 months later, 13 stone lighter, or 83 kg, or is 81, one of those.
I know people that went the opposite way.
I think most people did, but I was very lucky that I had started before lockdown. And I can honestly think that if I hadn't started before lockdown, I don't know if I'd be here now. I don't know. Like, I think I either would have eaten myself into a stupor or I don't know what would have happened.
It's an amazing story and I can't wait to get into it. Quick one. We have a quick zing off here.
Yeah, I was a bit rusty doing the intro there. We haven't done a proper episode since middle of December.
Yeah, last week we were saying the offer, episode 200, chaos. We just had like a group of the maddest cunts that we've ever had in the podcast come in pairs. So like they were just coming in every 10 minutes and we were like, this is nuts. And we were saying that we don't drink and the both of us felt hungover after.
Yeah.
I was like, I think I was just all laughed out and all as well, because the stories that people were saying, that I was just like, I am hanging together. It was fucking nuts.
And you think about it, the energy is spiking then 10 minutes later because a new crowd are coming in, they're full of energy, ready to go, and you're like, I'm only levelling out from the last crowd.
Yeah.
And then that starts again and again and again.
How long were you doing it for?
2 hours. Give yeah, or take, yeah.
The last pair was Darden and Joe. We didn't even laugh once when we got Bollock. We were like, you was hadn't even funny. You still agents. Right, I have a singer for you, yeah. Walk every single day straight, but have 3 months off together. Yeah.
Okay.
Or just walk normal 5 days with normal weekends.
It's like being a teacher, isn't it?
Work than normal.
You'd walk normal?
Yeah.
Would you as well?
Yeah.
I think I'd rather have 3 months off now if I was doing that.
Oh no, I prefer, even over Christmas, I was like, no, I don't want to work again. Like, see, it's 2 weeks off.
Yeah, it's a cunt. Do you know what's the worst as well? You know, people who walk jobs and then, because in my old job, it used to be that, you walk, but you get 2 random days off in the week.
Yeah.
Oh, you got a Tuesday and a Thursday off and you're fuming. Honestly, God, like, what are you meant to do on a Tuesday and a fucking Thursday, like? Do you know what I mean? I'd go for the 3 months off. Yeah, that teachers basically get that, do they?
Yeah,
yeah, that's basically what they get, yeah. I'm sure they have something to do though, don't they? Like prepping.
Yeah, and some of them correct exams, don't they?
Yeah, they do. That would be the worst. That'd be way worse than death.
But I hate the fact that you have to know, like, you have these 3 months and you have to go away. That's when you have to do everything in your life. Them 3 months, that's it.
Yeah. I like the flexibility.
Yeah. I like it as well. Yeah. What if I want to go away the first week in October?
Exactly.
I'm going to wait, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I want to, like,
as yeah, fair
enough. That's where you get time off as well.
Yeah, but I mean, teachers, overall, they'll have longer off. What do you get in a normal job? Like 25 to 30 days off?
Yeah.
Yeah, give or take.
In Ireland.
Yeah. So you have them days to pick, but the teachers get, what, bleeding 100 and something days off in total.
What?
Yeah.
Do they get paid all that?
Yeah. You've 3 months. You've May, June, July. And someone gets
90 days.
Yeah, but then add in all the other days.
Oh, yeah,
bank holidays as well.
It's true.
And they have midterms, Easter holidays.
God. What are we doing?
Yeah.
Are we in the wrong job?
Could be. We could be.
Terrence, there you go. You changed up.
They have more days off than blade me. Not only work 1 day a week. Oh my God. They are living the highlight.
But still then, it's like when it comes time to booking holidays, it's like, yeah, you're booking it in July, August, whatever, and it's all peak season. You're like, oh yeah, because you was at the reason why it's peak season. It's all the teachers going on holidays.
Yeah, but in fairness, though, like, fair play to the teachers for everything that they do, because there's no way I can handle that on a daily basis. I'd do my nothing.
I'd be punches thrown if I was... Honestly, I just think of 30 versions of me at 15. You're like, yeah, put your hands up.
Yeah.
Like, let's go. My two brothers are still in school. And do you know, if you're late now, they send like an automated text to your parents.
To your folks? Oh, wow.
To say like, oh yeah, this person wasn't in today. But like, they're coming in at like 9:10. They're doing the roll call at like 9:02 or something. And they're just like, oh, it's grand. And I was like, what? I was coming in at 9:02 and you're getting an hour of detention. Oh, you're getting a text home to say like, this person was in.
You don't get detention as well.
No.
Or like a black mark.
Nothing.
There used to be prefects standing at the door, and if you walked in 1 minute late, you were...
Ah, prefects weren't ranting on people in high school.
No, they weren't.
Ah, that's not wrong.
What's a fucking prefect?
For a prefect.
What are they?
A sixth year who was given, you know, responsibilities and jobs worth.
They wouldn't be ranting on people now. That's a bit hard.
Ah, they would, yeah.
Yeah. In your school, they would.
Yeah, they would, yeah.
Yeah, no, but...
I didn't make the cut.
Yeah, there was a heightened sense of discipline in high school back then, and then it was getting lackadaisy then.
Because that's all they're doing is texting now back.
Automated texts as well, so it's not even someone sitting down and writing a text.
Do you even look at those automated texts?
Well, they're not getting...
Well, yeah, that's what I mean. Like, if you were getting an automated text, would you even bother looking at it? Say your folks are like, whatever.
Yeah, I know we left the house today. So
yeah, it wasn't a WhatsApp, so I'm not... Yeah,
you'd be nearly...
You'd be grand.
Dunking off somewhere. What a legend.
Where are you off to? Yeah.
Look at when he comes in a half. Yeah. Fuck them. Anyways, right, Carla, I want to go into your story. On this podcast, with every guest, we'd like to know where you're from, what was life like growing up for you, so...
I'm originally from Rathgar, in South Dublin, and I grew up in... I'm the youngest of three by 15 years, so I'm the baby.
By 15 years?
By 15 years, yeah.
That's some stretch, that, yeah.
It is, yeah. So my dad was 25 years older than my mum. Same parents, whole family, but I was the surprise that arrived 15 years later. So my whole childhood basically revolved around food, because we owned a cafe and bakery. So when I was growing up, we had a bakery in our house, literally like in the back of our house, until I opened the door to the health inspector one day and she discovered that, and then we had to move out to the house. Sorry. Thought she was my auntie. But Yeah, so we like, I've just been surrounded by food like my whole life. That's just been the way that we operated. So with that, I was also overweight my whole life. So really nice childhood, but I was basically kind of like an only child because my siblings were so much older than me.
Yeah.
You said you were overweight. Were you conscious of that as a child?
My earliest memory of being different is 5. I remember being 5 years old and like starting to hide sweets and hide food wrappers and starting to use food as like a coping mechanism, as something to soothe me when something wasn't going right or feeling a bit weird. I would always use food. So I was like really conscious and really aware of that. And then it just got heightened and heightened the older I got, and like getting into secondary school then and being much bigger than everybody else in my class and much, you know, not wanting to do things like going on the like the canoeing club and things like that, because I was afraid that I wouldn't actually fit into the canoe, and if it capsized that I might drown, or not going on a trip to Paris because I was afraid that I'd have to ask for seatbelt extender on the plane, that kind of thing. So I was aware that I was different, my body was different from a very, very young age.
And did it take for you to get the secondary school to be like, I don't know, self-conscious?
No, I was self-conscious from straight away, because I was like, I'm 38 now. So when I was growing up, it was so normal to talk about people being fat and to shame people for being fat. There was rings of shame on the cover of Heat magazine. They were weighing Victoria Beckham on TV on The Big Breakfast after she had had her first son to see if she had lost all her baby weight. It was so normal. Like if you think about Bridget Jones, I don't know if you guys have ever seen Bridget Jones, but there was they're shaking their heads here saying no, but there was a lot of controversy around when that movie first came out, because she was supposed to have put on so much weight, but she was just like a normal person, probably a slimmer normal person, but she was called fat. Mm. So when you're looking at yourself thinking, I look bigger than that person who they're calling fat, it's just reinforcing a negative stereotype and negative narrative that you have in your head about you anyway. And then I was using food to cope with that.
And the first thing I'm thinking about is kids are cunts.
Yeah.
So what's that? Because we were all cunts as kids, weren't we? We were all like honest and fucking you slag and you do these kind of things. Was that kid slagging you because you were overweight when you were younger?
Funnily enough, it wasn't as big. It wasn't like other kids weren't as bad. It was mostly myself, adults who would speak about you around you, you know, or being like, or kind of apologize for the way you look, maybe. Mm. There would be the odd thing from other kids. But funnily, actually, now that you say that, it wasn't until you got a bit older and you started like maybe getting interested in boys and things like that. And you'd see there, you wouldn't get picked, you know, like, would you shift me, mate? And they like, it'd be a joke kind of something about you. Remember somebody coming up to me once walking around Jervis Street Shopping Centre and going, you've got a really pretty face, it's a pity about the rest of you. You know, that was something that was really common for people to say to me. It's like, but you have such a beautiful face. Like that would be the thing that people would say, not even just there's something wrong with the body, but like, but you have such a beautiful face. I was like, what was the preface to that sentence? What was before the but? It's like people wouldn't say that normally to another person. They would be like, oh, you're beautiful. But like, it was very specific. Like, but you have such a beautiful face.
You said that you were hiding like sweets and stuff like that. So are you aware growing up then, you know, like certain foods? So like this is a good thing and this is a bad thing, you know, like, because I feel like that it's kind of shifted from when we were kids, you were just told like, don't have sweets because it's full of sugar, make you hyper kind of thing.
Yeah.
No one was really saying like, don't eat that because it's not good for you. As in like, you could pour on a lot of weight or like takeaways and stuff like that. Whereas now I feel like kids are kind of being subtly taught in school. Because we were just told in school, like, eat your vegetables. Do you know what I mean? Vegetables are bleeding great. Eat loads of vegetables, but let's cut down on this. Do you know what I mean?
I was raised in a house where we would have vats of chocolate. Like, there was literally chocolate everywhere because we were a bakery. So, like,
cunt.
Yeah. Hate a bragger.
But I was never allowed to eat them.
Yeah.
So I was never allowed to have the things that were just so readily available around me. It wasn't until we had our own bakery and our own restaurant that I had a lot more freedom, that there wasn't somebody parenting me constantly going like, no, you can't eat that. So yes, I was aware that sweets are bad, veg is good, smaller portions are better. But it was really common for women around then to weigh everything and to know like Weight Watchers, like the points or Slimming World, the sins. You know, it was that language was just so normal for every woman that I knew. Like everyone, all my role models, my mother and my sister is 18 years older than me. It was just normal for me to know good food, bad food.
Mm.
Don't eat this. This makes you fat. Eat this, but make sure it's in small portions. It's just common knowledge.
Yeah. And were your parents actively trying to like balance this out?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They tried.
And to you, did that feel like you were doing something wrong? You know, if your parents are intervening and be like, this is what you have to do. Did you look at that and be like, oh, this is not right here. I'm doing something wrong.
I always felt like I was doing something wrong, that there was never, like, they always tried to do everything with love. But, you know, it's as being a parent now myself, like, I can only imagine what it was like. But it's very difficult, and it would have been very difficult for them. But they were trying to do what they thought was best. But for me, it was just, you're wrong.
Like, yeah.
You are not, this is not the way you're supposed to be. And I didn't understand why I was the way that I was. I didn't understand what was happening, and they didn't either. And it's not until nearly 30 years later that I started to understand what was happening inside me. So I don't blame them for it. I think they tried the best that they could.
Yeah. In fairness, I think like even the average person now would know so much more about nutrition than
yeah.
they did back then.
And mental health.
Yeah.
Because I think one of the hardest things for me to reconcile as I got older and as I like had a realization about myself is that nobody ever asked why. Nobody ever asked, why was young Carla reaching for food? Why was young Carla overweight? It was only, let's fix the problem.
Yeah.
But the problem is never food. You know, you don't get to 23 stone because you like to eat McDonald's.
Mm-hmm.
You get to 23 stone because there's something going on. And it was never a question of why. But I just don't think we understood as society there was a link between being overweight and poor mental health.
Yeah, you're trying to fight the fire rather than
exactly.
fireproof something.
Yeah, treat the symptom, not the cause.
Yeah.
Take us through a bit of your journey, like after school, some issues that you probably would have faced being overweight. I'm actually don't know here. I'm just
okay.
going there for them, like on all cylinders here.
Yeah.
Any jobs or anything like that you've had issues with in terms of walking or public transport or anything like that?
The biggest difference in my life now is a sense of freedom, because my weight took up 99.9% of my mental real estate. So say, for example, when I was bigger, say we were coming into this studio, I'd be thinking, okay, first of all, will I be able to walk in the door? Will I fit through the door? What's the door like? Is there going to be a turnstile to get into the building? When I get upstairs, will I have to walk upstairs? Will I be out of breath by the time I get upstairs? When I come in through the door into the studio, will there be chairs with armrests on them? Will I fit into the chair with armrests? Will I still be out of breath when I'm speaking to the guys? This was a 24/7 constant narrative. So going on a plane, will I be able to walk to the plane? How long is that trip going to be? Will I be able to use the travelators? Will I have to climb up the stairs? Will I be able to walk down the aisle? Will I have to go sideways down the aisle, which I would have? Is the seat on the plane, you know, when they have the solid seats, the armrests, I'm not going to fit into that. I'm going to have to ask for a seatbelt extender and hope that nobody noticed that I had to ask for a seatbelt extender. It would be a constant thing. Like it was literally never ending. So you can imagine the mental exhaustion.
Mm.
I used to also run a physical activity charity. So I, at 23 stone, was advocating and fundraising for older people to exercise, and standing up at 23 stone, asking people to give me money to fund exercise programs, knowing and thinking, these people all think I'm a fraud because obviously I don't exercise. I don't believe in what I'm selling because I don't have that physique. So it was never ending. My whole life was filled with this consistent narrative about how worthless I was, but also how exhausting it was to fit into the world as a bigger person.
You've mentioned the mental health side of it, and we'll get to that, how you address that. But growing up physically, what were you doing to combat this?
To combat my weight?
Yeah.
Or I've been on a diet, or had been on a diet every single Monday morning since the age of 7. I was on my first diet. I've known how to count calories. I've done every single weight loss program ever. I have had some some experiences where I did actually lose weight. Like when I was 18, I lost 6 stone with Atkins, which is 92 pounds, I think, which is about 30 kilos. Sorry, you get really good at the maths of like dividing it up for everybody. Yeah, you were like, you were looking at it and going, which one is that now? But so when I was 18, I did Atkins and lost that weight and also gained gallstones and a really bad stomach issue because all I was eating was cream and beef and chicken and cheese all the time. And I was 12 stone at that time, but I wasn't healthy and I looked really sick. And then of course you eat a slice of bread and you put it all back on again, you know, and then I've lost some more weight, lost 17 kg at one point, but just put it back on again. So it was like this constant cycle. And then when I got into my teenage years, I developed bulimia and then got really frightened when I started to throw up blood and then just basically became a binge eater. So I was the same as bulimia, but without the purging part.
It's mad that, because when you hear bulimia, you often think of the other end of the scale. It's someone who's severely underweight.
Yeah.
So it's a highlight that it goes both ways there.
It goes both ways. And I think that there is, when we think about any type of eating disorder, it always goes towards the, you know, the extreme, like there used to be a thing online called Thinspirations. So it would be like somebody who'd be really thin, like the Olsen twins when, you know, or like, do you remember when Paris Hilton and Nicole Richie were really, really skinny? There was a lot of eating disorders around that time. They also became trendy, but there was also the total on the end of the spectrum where we have like binge eating and you've got food addiction as well, which is where people will eat and eat and eat, or bulimia. And you might throw up or purge some, but you can still put on weight. It's such a toxic cycle. Yeah.
And are you saying that you are physically exercising as well, Jordan, these years when you are losing the bits away here and there?
Rarely.
Right.
I was very much so an exercise avoidant. Right. I hated exercise. The only thing I ever liked doing was boxing, and it's because I was really good at it and probably quite powerful. And I liked the gym coming up to kind of in my 30s. I started going to the gym like late 20s and early 30s. And I really liked the weight training part of it. And I liked the strength. I liked the feeling of being really strong. Like I was able to leg press 175 kg at one point. But I was also trying to lose weight every time I was exercising. I never exercised just to exercise.
Yeah.
I only ever exercised to lose weight. It's only in the last 2 years, even year and a half, that I've, for the first time in my life at 38, have actually exercised for the joy of exercising. I started dancing again. And it was purely because I love dancing. It's nothing to do with losing weight.
Mm. It's great to hear that as well, because people don't realise the mental benefits that you get from exercising. Like blowing off a bit of steam, how good it is for your psyche. It's great for the head.
And to have something where you're not thinking, you were saying like it was a Hyrox, is it?
Yeah.
Like when you're doing something like I dance in heels, you have to concentrate on what you're doing. Otherwise,
one mistake, your ankle's gone.
Exactly. Like you don't have to think about anything else. And that's what I loved about the gym when I was going, even before I lost weight, was that it was just this moment where I realized I'm not thinking about anything else, even though I was conscious about what everybody else was thinking about me. But you know, when you're doing one movement, you're not thinking about it just for a second. It was just that respite for a few moments of not having that constant negative narrative going on in my head.
So it was an escape.
Just that little break. Yeah. Just a tiny little break for a moment. And it would only be when actually doing the exercise. And then as soon as you finish, it'll be back again. It would be like leg pressing would just like quieten the world. And then you'd put it back down again, put the safety on, and then all the noise would start again. It was all the time.
That must have been so mentally draining.
I don't think I realized how mentally draining was until it wasn't there anymore.
Mm.
There's so many things that I didn't realize were a thing until they were no longer a thing.
Yeah.
Like I have a series on my Instagram, which is literally like things that are no longer things since I've lost weight. One of them is like turning the bed. I never realized that was hard until it wasn't hard anymore. So I mean, literally like going from like your left side to your right side, that used to be an effort for me. Like I would have to almost sit up and turn. And then one day I just turned in the bed. I was like, oh, look at that. That was easy. I used to not be able to cross my legs. So I wasn't able to sit here with my legs crossed, physically incapable of doing it. And then you just do it one day. Or like walking up the stairs and all of a sudden you're like, oh, that was easy. I'm not out of breath. I'm not sweating. I'm not exhausted. Just like one set of stairs, like not all the way up to the fifth floor in here. Just one little thing. It was so tiring. And it's amazing that there's things that people who've never had a weight issue take for granted, like getting on a plane. But say, for example, you find out that you have to go to something really fancy tomorrow night. You've no clothes with you. I'm sure you can head into town and pick something out. If that happened to me at 23 stone, I wouldn't have had an option. I wouldn't have been able to go anywhere. There's two stores in Dublin that have plus size clothes available for women. And I would have been lucky if I found something that A, fit, and B, maybe it would look nice. But it was so difficult. You just didn't have that freedom. You didn't have an option. It was just not there. And now, if you ask me to go to something, the issue is not, will there be something, but like, can I afford
too
it?
Much.
Yeah, yeah, that was too much. Like, my wardrobe was full now. That's the big change.
There are little things or details that just never even crossed my mind.
Yeah.
Even as simple as, like, just crossing your legs or getting on a plane or, like you said, turning over on the bed. I just didn't even ring in my head. I was thinking of all the other things that comes with it, the health issues and stuff like that. But there's so many small little things that you can struggle with day to day. And like you said, it's only when they're gone, then the noise, you realise, fucking hell, you must have been so fucking drained from everything, every little thing in your life, you know?
If you look at videos of me before, I think videos, it's really hard to hide the pain that's going on in somebody. You can really see it. I look exhausted, and not exhausted because of being tired or, you know, overworked. I look drained. I look like there's no life in me because I was just being beaten down so much by myself and by all the little things that was taking up so much real estate in my mind. Mm-hmm. It was such a, when you look at videos from me from before, I look trapped and I look like hopeless. Like there's nowhere to go because I didn't know where to turn because I tried every diet under the sun and nothing was ever working.
At what point did you make a decision or understand or have an idea that it was mental health that was playing a huge factor in the weight gain?
The first time I was in my kind of early 20s and I was feeling like there has to be something else wrong. There has to be something like, why can I not lose weight? This doesn't make any sense. I've tried every diet. There has to be there's a missing piece here. So I figured, you know, had the thyroid checked, that would have been grand. So the only thing left was that I must be celiac. That has to be it. Like, I have to be celiac because, you know, there was always the kid in school who was celiac and was really skinny growing up and they got the large Mars bars opposed to the little ones because they had gluten in them, you know, the lucky bastards. But I was like, that has to be what it is. So I booked in with a GP and I went in. I have an amazing GP. And at the time, I was really depressed. I had just finished college. It was the middle of the recession. There was no work going. And I had no confidence in myself to go out and like get work or find something or just kind of do like any kind of random job. And I went into him and I sat down and I was about to say, I think I'm celiac. And it just came out, I need help. And that moment he diagnosed me with binge eating disorder. And he said words to me that would plant a seed that would take nearly 10 years to kind of flourish and to make sense to me. And he said, when you fix the head, the weight will just fall off. I was like, what's this fucking man talking about? And it's not my fucking head that's the problem. It's my body. The body is the issue. And he sent me to therapy, to relationship therapy, actually, to myself, my relationship with food. I was 3 years in that. And that helped me stop binging. But I still wasn't able to lose weight. There was no part of me that actually lost the weight. That's when I lost 17 kg and then I put it back on again. And then I tried keto when that became really popular again. And then I kept eating all the courgettes and the cheese and the cream and then just kept adding pasta back into it instead of the courgette and then just kept piling on weight. I was buying a house with my partner and we were doing a thing called the morning pages, which is basically, it's a part of the artist's way. And I was in marketing at the time. I was trying to kind of work on my artistic, my creative side. And in the artist's way, you write 3 pages every morning. You just free flow. That's the idea of it. And we were kind of doing this while we didn't have anything else to do. When you're buying a house, you know, trying to save loads of money. And I started writing and something started to stir inside me. And the whole part of the artist's way is you don't stop with the morning pages, this practice you do, you don't stop writing. You don't edit yourself. You don't allow, like, if you make a mistake, you don't cross it out. You just do whatever. It doesn't matter. You just keep going. And it was the first time in my life that I ever connected to the real me. It was the first time that I'd ever allowed myself to be unedited, not the Carla who is trying to make up for the fact that she's 23 stone when she didn't have to make up for it at all. But I felt like I did. And something really started to come up in me, and so much so that I got scared of it that I didn't even want to go back and start writing again. I was driving down the street and it felt like I got hit by a bus. It was just like this massive jolt across me. And I had a realization that everything I'd ever thought about myself was a lie, and that everything I thought and this narrative that I created was stemmed from my childhood, from things that I heard, things that people had said to me, things in society. And I just built this narrative and reinforced it constantly about how worthless I was. This wasn't my voice. It didn't belong to me. And I had no idea who I was. I had no idea anything about myself. I didn't know what I liked. I didn't know, because everything had been so edited to be okay to be in the world. And from that point on, it started a really bizarre journey of self-discovery, and a very, very painful one, to unearth things about myself and to deal with them. And I went back to that GP, the same man, and he said, you finally had your Damascus moment, your come to Jesus moment. You finally, it's clicked. 10 years after he said it to me the first time, he said, that's it. That's what I said. That's what I meant by that.
He must have been a doctor in philosophy, was he?
He's a very, very wise man, a very, very wise older GP. I'm very lucky to have him, because it was incredible. He was ahead of his time in terms of mental health and understanding the impact of mental health on every aspect of your life. Yeah. It's something that a lot of GPs didn't have.
Was he Irish?
No.
I had a feeling.
He's a South African. He's
Muslim. I feel like when you venture outside of Ireland, people are more aware and connected with their bodies and the earth and the relationship with nature. And it's only when you experience that you're like, how do you know? Like, you know, like old wives' tales in other cultures, walk on stuff. Like, if you're sick, you take this and you do this and you blah, blah, blah. That's good for you. And you're like, why aren't we? How do you know all this?
He was a OBGYN, so a help deliver babies in the bush in South Africa. So he was doing cesareans, like literally like in the jungle. So like he's really connected to the ground and to the earth. So he's a very wise older man. And he's incredible. But that was it. That was the start of my self-discovery journey, and which led to my weight loss. Just a little more.
Did you ever think about getting a gastric band or anything like that?
Yeah, of course.
And what stopped you?
I was afraid that it wouldn't work, because I knew a lot of people in the States. My family had a lot of family friends over there, and I knew a couple of people who had it, and then it didn't work. Either it worked, but they ended up putting the weight back on again, which kind of reinforced what my doctor was saying about it being about the head and not about the body.
Yeah.
But it was, I did think about it, but it also, it's very dramatic and very drastic. Like it changes your whole life. Like you can't eat and drink at the same time for like the rest of your life, basically.
It's true, you can't have solid foods.
No, you can have solid foods for a really good amount of time. You can have solid foods, but like people can have a lot of complications with it. Like people think the gastric bypass or any of those is the easy way out, and it sure shit isn't the easy way out. Like it's really dramatic surgery that changes your entire physiology.
Yeah, and your mental health as well.
Exactly, because if you
don't say one, sorry if I cut across. No, one of the side effects is depression.
Oh, is it? Yeah.
Yeah. Like it's one of the, like it's so common that if someone got the gastric band, they'll end up in depression within a year. It's so common.
Jesus, that is a mad one.
Isn't it mad? That's like, there's no easy way out.
There's no shortcut to it. Remember we had Tony O'Neill and he was like, if you want to lose weight and live a good lifestyle, it's none of the sexy things. It's like hydrate, sleep, go to the gym, get a good trainer. It's not sexy.
Mental consistency. Health was another one that he said as well.
Yeah.
It was just that he just ticked off all these things and said every single one of these is hard. All of them.
It is hard.
He was like, there's no easy way to doing it.
But also, it's not as hard as you think.
No, when you're into it.
When you're in it.
Starting.
Yeah, it's like the airplane, like getting an airplane off the ground. You use, was it something percent, like a huge percentage of the fuel to get off the ground. And then when you're in the air, you're just gliding. So once you start, it's easier just to keep going. As we were talking about earlier, to keep it at 100%. It's easier to do that it is.
To build up to 100%.
Yeah.
It's like going for a run. If you get past the hold-all, you're going to go for a run. But the hardest part is getting past the hold-all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where routine comes in.
Yeah.
That's the basis of like of a lot of what I did to lose weight, was just creating routines that helped me to stay consistent.
Yeah.
That's the key.
What is your thoughts on Ozempic?
Ooh.
You can tell me to fuck off if you want. We'll just move on.
Fuck off. I think everything has its place. And I think that there is, you know, if it had been really popular when I was wanting to lose weight, I'd be lying if I said I wouldn't have thought about it the same way I thought about gastric band or any kind of surgery. But there's also part of me that would be very cautious about the long-term effects of anything and any kind of intervention. And one thing I've learned is that it's about changing us down to the core of the person for a positive, in the positive way, changing the habits, changing the behaviors. And the program that I did, Body Slims, that really helped to teach me to do that. And in doing so, when you finish the intervention, you have changed. You are a different person. Mm. And therefore, you know, like if you have gastric bypass surgery, or you take Ozempic, or you take a pill or something that's an intervention, if you don't fix the reason as to why you were overweight in the first place, the odds are stacked against you that when that intervention is over, you know, either a couple of years down the line, as I said, like family, friends who had surgery, put the weight back on again, or if you stop taking Ozempic and you haven't worked on the reason as to why you were overweight, then it's likely that those reasons are still going to be there when you stop taking the intervention.
Yeah, that's a great answer. I love how honest you are as well in saying, like, you probably would have tried it.
Yeah,
I would have thought about it.
Yeah.
Like I don't know if I would have tried it because I was petrified of needles.
Yeah.
But I would have definitely thought about it, you know, and seen what would have happened. I'm really glad that I didn't and that I didn't have to do it.
Yeah.
And that's actually why I share a lot of my stories, because I want people to know that there is, you can do it naturally.
Yeah.
Because I thought there was no hope, but there is hope.
Yeah.
That it is possible. If I can do it, then anybody can do it.
Carla, that's why I love stories like yours. Even if I can't relate, I'm like, that is amazing. Because for the people that are overweight, let's say, to see your story, I can't even imagine the effect that could have. Because it's the same with anything. Once you can relate to some, it's like, I used to be in addiction. So I'm drinking drug free now. But I used to see people who were drinking drug free and I used to envy them, but I used to go, it's possible. If they can do it, I can do it. And I can imagine that's the way someone who's overweight would look at you, especially in the way you went about it. And you're so honest in saying, you probably would have tried Ozempic. You didn't try the gastric band because you're seeing what happened to certain people. They just went back to the way they were. But you did it naturally.
Mm. You used to say that thing about the records, remember? Once one is broken, it's broken so much then.
Yeah.
What was it?
It's just like there were so many Olympic records that were like stuck for years and years and years. And then one person breaks it. And then like five, six, seven people break it. We're in a couple of years after. It's
because
just like,
the mental block has been...
It's done. Someone's had to do it. Oh, it's possible. If they did it, I can do it. It's just then that just carries on and trickles down. We're just talking about like fucking records and Olympic records. And talking about just probably a real person going to be listening to this overweight at home, depressed out of their head and going, fucking hell, she went 23 stone to 10 stone naturally. I can do that. And I just think that is the most amazing and inspiring thing in the world. But we're not done, so we're only at the good part. That light bulb moment you were talking about when you went to your GP, what's the next steps after that then?
The next step was I went back to therapy, went back and was like, okay, I need to kind of unearth some of this shit that's going on inside me. And after a little bit of time, I was like, I realized that a lot of what I was doing, anytime I had done any kind of tried any intervention in the past, was out of hate. It was out of blame, shame, bribery in some cases to try and make me change, and that everybody else had wanted me to do it and I wanted to do it because of those reasons, because I was being blamed into losing weight, because I was being shamed into it, because I was, you know, whatever, into losing weight. I would want to do it because maybe your man will fancy me more, or I want to do it because I'll fit into that bridesmaid dress, or I want to do it because maybe, you know, I'll be treated with a bit more respect, or I'll whatever. But in that therapy, I started to get to know myself a bit more for the first time ever and start to kind of meet myself. And we did a little exercise where kind of went into myself, you know, into the core of who I was. And I found this little light inside of me. And I'm not a wooey person in any way, shape or form. I'm very like logical, practical. But there was something inside me. I felt like there was just this little light. And it's funny that there's a blue light on now, because it was just this little blue light that was inside me, and I could see the light kind of taking over me and just wanting to step out of my body. And I was like, okay, I think I'm ready to let this go. And I realized that what I'd built around me was this barrier between myself and the world so that I didn't have to deal with the world. It was a protection, but also it was the result of the way I had treated myself and the way I had tried to soothe myself. And at the time, my sister, who's 18 years older than me, Adriana, I was going away and I asked her, could I borrow a suitcase? And she appeared down in my office in Tampa Bar with the suitcase. And she had also been overweight. And all of a sudden, she wasn't anymore. And I was like, what the fuck is happening to you? Where are your legs? What's going on? What, like, and she lost weight from the legs up. Some people lose it from the neck down. It depends on the person. All of a sudden, her legs were really skinny. And she was like, I've done this program called Body Slims. And it's run by this guy called Jared Moore. And he's a former alcoholic and he designed a weight loss program and he's a peak performance coach and he does this and it's calories and it's walking and you watch seminars. And I was like, cult, this is bullshit. She's going to put all the weight back on again in a couple of weeks. You know, this is because I was also the biggest weight loss expert. Being 23 stone, I knew every diet you should do. I knew everything. I could tell you exactly what you need to be doing to lose weight, but I'd never take my own advice. So at the time then, I was going through the therapy and I saw my sister continue to lose weight. And I was like, okay, I think maybe I should try that thing that she's done that seems to actually be working for her. And I had to swallow my own pride and kind of get out of my own way because, like you said, seeing somebody do it. So I'd seen my sister my whole life wanting to lose weight. And all of a sudden she was doing the thing she'd always wanted to do. And she kind of, I felt almost at one point like she'd broken the pact that we had, that we, it was okay to be overweight because she was overweight as well. Then all of a sudden she wasn't. And I was kind of left on my own. It's like sometimes when you change, you lose friends. You've heard that, I'm sure, you know, and because of, you actually show a mirror up to that person and they can see their own mistakes. And that's what happened to me. I saw everything I was doing to myself and I saw my sister change and I was like, okay, fine. So January 2020, I started Body Slims. 10 weeks into the first cycle. So they do cycles of it. Basically, the thing about Body Slims is that it's based on three main principles. So there's diet part, you get calories. There's exercise. The only exercise you need to do is 1 hour walk every single day. And then there's the mental health aspect, which is the main part that's been missing from every other weight loss attempt I had. And I saw Jared, the main guy, do a talk. And one of the things he said is when you fix the head, the ass will follow. And I was like, huh, it's funny. It's a lot less eloquent way of saying exactly what my GP had said to me. And I was like, okay, maybe this is the thing. And 10 weeks into my first cycle, at the end of it, I lost 3 stone. And then 14 months later, I lost 13 stone and I was done. That was it. It was not easy in any way, shape or form, but my God, was it simple. Mm. Like Body Slims basically gave me a roadmap to lose weight. They were like, this is how you lose weight. And here is the map and how to do it. And you surrender to it like you would in AA, like you would in any addiction program, because a lot of being overweight is an addiction. It's a method of self-soothing, as most addictions are, dealing with what's going on inside you. And for me, it was that really negative voice. And it helped me to understand my habits, understand what I was doing that got me to being overweight. And how to dismantle that and take it down one step, or as Jared says, one brick at a time, taking one step, one brick of the extension down every single day. And it's, unfortunately, it's the really unsexy things.
Yeah.
It's doing it one damn day on top of the other, 7 days a week, no cheat days. And you know, there's all the, oh, you can't, you have to live a little. I can tell you now that I live a life 1,000 times better than I ever lived just because I had to live a little and have some cake. My life, I don't have all those things we spoke about anymore. You know, I don't have to worry about getting on a plane. I can just get on a plane. The only issue is affording to get on a plane. You know, I can go and buy clothes now. I don't have to think about it anymore. That's living. You know, saying you have to live a little and you have to have 10 pints in a night, that's not living. We have to think about what it is that we equate with living. You know, what is it that is this the most that we can get out of our lives? Like, I don't drink anymore. You know, a lot of people would say, oh, you know, you don't drink, you can't enjoy yourself. God, life must be so boring. You must know yourself.
Mm-hmm. Get it all the time. But off people who don't really understand, mm-hmm. especially like sometimes you go to a different country and someone will say, hey, you're not Irish, you don't drink.
Yeah.
And you go, what the fuck are you on about? Like,
yeah.
Do you find that comes from a lot of insecure people? It's the first thing they say about you.
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
They kind of show that insecurity then. Like, well, if you don't drink, you can't be fun. And be like, mate, you obviously don't know how to have fun then.
Yeah.
I think some people fear that you judge them because you don't do it. I don't judge anybody who eats food.
Eats it their own.
Exactly. It's just not, like, I don't judge anybody who's, like, goes out and has a couple of pints. That's their life. But if that's the only way that you're living, maybe people don't know that there is another way. Mm. Like, I used to drink a lot. I used to drink 5-6 nights a week, and I could put away 10 Jack and Coke, no bother. It's also 23 stone. So it was easier to drink a considerable amount. But I would feel awful in myself. You know, I was drinking to deal with the outside world, to deal with how I felt in social situations, and I was eating to deal with how I felt inside. They weren't good for me. They weren't good things for me. For other people, they don't have an issue with it. For me, I had an issue, and I live a much happier life without drinking and without overeating constantly.
When was the first moment you realized this is working?
I have two moments. One, I used to follow people on social media, and I'd never seen anybody who had to lose as much as I did and did it naturally. There was one girl called Jordan Trink. She lives in Canada, and she 150 pounds she lost naturally. And I remember looking at her going, why can't I do what she's doing? Why can't I do it? I want to do what she's doing so badly. And I was a couple of weeks into Body Slims. It's about 6 weeks in, and I was driving out of my house going, God, I wish I could just do what Jordan does. And I was like, oh no, wait, I am doing it. I am doing this. It kind of started to creep in then. But at the end of Body Slims, you do a 10K challenge. Now, as I was saying earlier, I was never an exercise fan. I would always, you know, park right beside the shopping center if I was to go in. You know, if I had to park any further away, I'd be like depressed. I'd be like, oh God, I don't want to do this. I never did any PE or games in school because I couldn't. I physically couldn't. And you do the 1 hour walk every day with Body Slims, and I'd injured myself at the start, and I'd only just started to get up to the 1 hour by the end of the first 10 week cycle. And I kind of knew that the 10K challenge was coming up. And basically you do a 10 kilometer challenge to prove to yourself how much you've changed. It's like your challenge at the end of it, just go, you know, you did this. And I was thinking, that's going to be great for everybody else, but I'm not going to do that because I'm different, because I'm special, because I have, you know, I'm heavier and I had injured myself. And Jared, the head coach Body Slims, says, if you don't do this challenge, you can't say you did Body Slims. And I was like, Colin, I've done everything else that I was asked. I've watched every seminar. I've tracked every calorie. I've done the walks, even though they haven't been to the full extent. I did everything. How can you say I didn't do it? And I was like, okay, fine. I'm going to have to do this, aren't I? I'm going to have to do it. And it was during lockdown. So it was a 5K radius around the house. So I mapped my, like an infinity sign basically around my house in a 10K radius or 5K radius. I made a playlist of 90s and 2000s dance tracks, like some of the real bangers. You can't go wrong. Just some of the real bangers to get you out, like The Prodigy and like Two Unlimited, you know, just like really high energy to get. I was like, okay, fine. I made it 4 hours long because I was convinced that's how long at least it was going to take me. And there was one point when I realized I was on it. I was doing it. It was really early on a Sunday morning. That was the start of me. I love to get up now really early and do my walks. And it was about 6:30 and I was going down one bay right beside the sea, because I'm lucky enough to live beside the sea. And I realized, God, I'm walking faster. My pace is faster than any other pace I've ever done before. And I was looking around going, I'm actually kind of enjoying this. And the next track that came on was Faithless, God is a DJ. This is my church.
This is where I heal my hurts.
Exactly. Mm. And that was it. That was the point where I go, this is it. I've healed my hurts. I've done this. I did the 10K challenge, and I've done thousands of 10K challenges since. And that was the point where I realized that this is it. This is the time it's changing. And it was because I allowed myself to believe in myself. I suspended disbelief and kept going and was consistent with it and challenged those shitty stories that I told myself that I can't do this. This is for everybody else, and proved that I could do it and carried myself home to 14 stone weight loss. And then had a baby, put on 40 pounds, and then lost it again. Because that's what you do.
Yeah. It's amazing, honestly.
I wanted to ask you about that.
Yeah.
Surely when you found out you were pregnant, were you like, oh, was that like a real worrying time that like, I'll end up putting all this weight back on? Yeah. Or why did you do enough work where you know, like, I'll bounce back again?
I knew that I would, but it would still psychologically was really weird to see the scales going back up again. And my sister is brilliant. And she was like, just remember, this is not fat. It's a human
person.
You are literally growing organs. Yeah. You know, this is like, it's amazing what you can do. But I also didn't know that I was going to be able to have a baby. Just before I started Body Slims, I had done a test to see what my fertility was like, whether I was going to need to go for it straight away, you know, and try and have a baby, or was I able to wait to lose weight and then try and have a baby. And they basically told me that I was in perimenopause at 32 and that was most likely was never going to be able to have a child. And then 4 weeks after reaching my goal weight, one day, you know, I found myself pregnant. So that was it. But seeing that scale going up psychologically was quite painful to deal with. But also you got so many hormones going on inside you, because hormones are just these crazy little fucking bastards that you like, that just change things mentally. And when you're pregnant, my God, it's so different. And I decided then to stop knowing what my weight was, to stop seeing the scales going up. And I asked my GP in the hospital, I was like, I don't need to see what my weight is, because it's just not...
Yeah. Unnecessary.
It's unnecessary. It wasn't like they needed it to make sure there things were happening. I didn't need to know.
Yeah.
It was, I was like, I don't need to know this. And that was just a boundary that I created for myself. And then had my son, got really, really, really horrendous postnatal depression, and wanted to do, when I got cleared after having a C-section, got cleared to go to start walking again. All I wanted to do, there was 2 weeks when I was on bed rest after having him. I just remember lying in bed, feeling like I was in prison, with these hormones running around, this baby hanging off me, you know, and just going, what the fuck has happened to my life? And all I wanted to do was do the thing that made me feel as good as I had for the last, you know, the year before when I'd reached my goal weight, and that was the walking and just feeding myself really well. And as soon as I was cleared, I was back walking. And then I did Body Slims again. I did one round and lost the 40 pounds that I put on when I was having him, and that was it.
Mm. Was it shocking to lose so much weight so quick? To you or even your man or Body Slims, or is this just like what happens to everyone?
I think there is a lot of controversy over my weight loss speed because it was so fast. But when I tell you I was determined, I was determined. Once I knew that it was working, I was done. I was like, I want this off me. I have lived 33 years of my life not living the way I want to. I am done. And so, yes, it was, because it was in lockdown as well. So I emerged from lockdown.
Different, yeah.
Like literally like half the woman I used to be, you know. So it was quite shocking for people. I remember like in work, we had the first meeting we had and I was 8 stone down and people were like, what the fuck has happened? Like, you know, and I forget, like even now I see people that I haven't seen from before and they're like, who are you? And I'm like, it's Carla. Because I sometimes forget that that's what I used to look like, because I'm so used to who I am now. That it can be weird for people. It can be very strange, but it's a weird one because it's just like, I'm just so used to it now. I wouldn't say I don't identify with the person that I used to be, but I recognize her, but she kind of just feels like another person.
Mm-hmm. If you could go back and say one thing to her, what would you say?
That you are valuable no matter what weight or size or what you look like, that you are a valuable human being, that nothing about the way you look in here is what counts. That's what I'd say to anybody, to her especially.
Mm. Is it hard to maintain an idea worry ever? Or again, like Calvin said with a follow-up earlier on, like, do you feel like you've done so much work in yourself that you know?
I think there's always, you can never let arrogance get in the way and think that you know best. What's interesting is that even though I've worked on so many habits and behaviors, that new ones can creep in, that without even realizing, like I started dancing, and dancing is seriously intense cardio workout. I never experienced true depletion before, like literally having nothing left in your body that you can't move. I was like, what the fuck is this feeling? You know, like I've never had this before, you know, because I was a food addict, so I never let myself get hungry. Mm. So to the point where I had nothing left and I'm like, I need sugar quickly. So you can start to develop a sugar habit. I'm like, oh, okay. There's something, so I'm aware of, okay, no, there's something going on here. You know, I can undo the work. Or I was injured. I tore my abdomen and bulged a disc in September last year. So I wasn't able to walk or dance for 4 months. that was a huge psychological impact on me because they're my coping mechanisms now. Like my coping mechanism used to be food and drink. And now my physical activity is my coping mechanism to take that away. And obviously with the amount of walking, the amount of dancing I was doing, I was eating higher calories. And then you take those away. I'm like, oh, suddenly my jeans aren't fitting the way they used to. But I know that I can undo anything. I would never consider it like I have to lose weight again. It's just like, oh no, I need to just check what I'm doing here and, you know, and kind of sort myself out. And then that's it. Sort yourself out in your grand. A couple of weeks of just...
Yeah.
A couple of weeks of just, you know, staying on track and being conscious of what you're doing.
Yeah.
Because I know how to do it. You know, I know if I need to reset, I always go back to the fundamentals, like you were saying earlier, water, nutrition, movement and sleep. Mm. If I get those four things back, I'm good.
Yeah. This is going to be a very personal question.
Okay.
So as he said earlier, feel
tell
free to
fuck off.
Fuck off.
Okay. Yeah.
But physically, the aftermath of that, having that much weight, what's that like?
I'm not going to tell you to fuck off. So I have an extraordinary amount of loose skin. You probably wouldn't notice it though. I don't know. If you want to be honest, would you have noticed that I've...
Carl, when I seen you sitting out there and you said I used to be 23 stone, I was like, no. Only for I know. Like, if we walk outside now and I said, do you think she used to be 23 stone? 100% of people are saying no.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like I know how to dress for it. I'm lucky that I've always had a lifelong interest in fashion, so I know how to dress to not hide it, but I know how to dress well for my body. I always did, actually, because even back when I was 23 stone, people wouldn't have thought I was 23 stone. Like, you know, there wasn't like they didn't think it was 10 stone, but you know, but there is an impact on it. So I can show you a photo of my face. Maybe you can put it up. My face took a big brunt of the effect of weight loss. Because you don't get to choose what fat leaves your body. You know, you don't get to choose that your cheeks go because your cheeks have little like pockets of fat in them. And I looked really gaunt when I lost weight. So my face is full of filler and full of Botox. And that's something I keep up. And that's a personal choice. You know, that's my choice to do. I'm not saying that anybody who loses weight has to do whatever. I'll also probably in the long run have skin removal surgery in the long run because I kind of want to finish it almost. I kind of want to be done. So I knew when I was losing weight that I was not going to have the same, even if I got to 10 stone something, I was not going to look like somebody from the office out here who's always been 10, 11, 12 stone. That wasn't a reality for me. I knew that. I was aware of it. But I would if anybody is worried about the effects of loose skin, please don't let that be a reason or an excuse not to lose weight because the benefits totally outweigh the negatives, if excuse the horrendous pun, but they really do. It's so worth it, the effort that you put into yourself for the sake of loose skin. And honestly, most people don't notice. If I was naked or if I was in a bikini or a swimsuit, you'd notice. You would definitely notice. But in the general gist of it, you might catch a glimpse of an arm or a bit of back boob, as we like to call them, very classy. But you know, who cares?
Who gives a bollocks? You literally get to say you're half the woman you were. That must be the coolest feeling ever. I literally mean it, actually.
Yeah. Like, and it's also, I kind of see them as like my battle scars.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
They're kind of like, I earned those.
To remember.
Yeah. Yeah.
You said you can say you're half the woman you are. You're nearly twice the woman you were before, though, if you look at it that way.
It's true. Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
You're half the woman in weight, but
twice the woman
in stature.
Yeah.
If you want to look at it that way. And the reason why I brought that up is because I seen a video on Twitter the other day and it's this woman, she has like a Peloton bike and she's do you know the video I'm talking about?
I know, with their arms.
You can see her, she's literally shrinking going through the video tour every day.
Oh, I think I've seen that before.
She's amazing.
She has some loose skin on her arms. So like when I'm finished, obviously you scroll through the comments and the first thing is like, oh, look at the skin on her arms. And I'm like, she's literally shrunk through the course of a whole video. And the first thing you say is, you still have to point out a flaw in somebody, you know what I mean? But it is something that people do have to face up to, you know?
You do have to consider it. And there'll be scenarios where it would, like for that woman, her upper arms were where she carried so much weight. So she did have, and you can't out-exercise this. Like, I think that's a lot of, people think you can exercise, you know,
or build. More tricep exercise.
Yeah, like you can, over time, your skin actually does increase the elasticity. So it will kind of shrink a bit. But when you're building up your triceps, you're building up a muscle, you're not building your skin. And if you're not going to want a muscle that big that's going to refill that arm, you know, that's good luck if you're going to get that. Like, you know, there's men who've been like bodybuilders, yeah, trying to get it, you know, like, yeah, that's not going to happen, you know. Yeah. So you can do things that will help it, but it's not going to, it's not going to dramatically change it, you know. But that one, I know she's had her, I think it's brachial something, where you have the upper arm lift, which is one of the surgeries that I will hopefully eventually have.
Yeah.
If I go down that route. It's just, it's a bit expensive. So,
so she's setting up a GoFundMe. Yeah.
No.
At the start of the episode, I did mention that it was like January and people are all looking for motivation and somebody to be an inspiration to get them. What advice would you give to somebody that's starting off on their journey now?
The first thing I would do is gently and compassionately ask yourself, why are you doing it? Are you doing it because you want to do it, or are you doing it because somebody else ashamed, blamed, or bribed you into doing it? And if you want to do it, I'd highly recommend body slims. I'd highly recommend understanding your why. And the most important thing to remember is that your motivation will wane and that your consistency will need to be there to pick it up. Weight loss is simple. It's simple. It is. Mm. You know,
there's a formula.
There's a formula. Eat less calories than your body needs to function. That is how you lose weight. Whether you do it counting calories, counting sins, counting whatever it is, that's how you lose weight. But how do you do that is a big difference. And the how is consistency. It is doing the same thing day in, day out. And it's not sexy, but my God, is it worth it when you get there. And when you start to see the results, you'll get motivated by your own results. And that will give you a kick again until that motivation will wane. And the consistency will be there to pick you up and build some routines in that make life just easier for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Such an important message, particularly now, like we are talking about, like the shortcuts, you know, like the Ozempic and gastric bands, which are like really popular now. But
not shortcuts either, but
you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Of like the short term fixes, yeah. I think. So it's nice to hear that now, like this is the long term solution is here. It's all about getting going.
Get it going. If you feel motivated to do it, take the opportunity, get the motivation, but understand that it's about consistency and that things will get hard, it will get difficult, and that motivation is going to wane. But you need to remember that why you want to do this, and keep that in the forefront of your mind and believe that it's possible. Because it is, because if I can do it, anybody can do it.
Yeah. You were talking about addictions earlier and saying like you had a food addiction. And it's a weird one when you think about it, because, you know, if somebody is a heavy drinker and they have a drinking problem, people will confront them on that.
Yeah.
If someone's a heavy smoker, like how often do you get told to grab the smoke stand?
Ah, every day, man. Yeah.
Someone funny.
I'm like, this is all I have left.
Yeah. Leave me alone.
I'm like, I kicked all of these. Yeah. And now I have a smoke. Oh God.
But people have no problem confronting that. But when it comes to a food addiction, people are very sensitive about how they approach it.
Yeah.
It's weird when you look at it, isn't it?
I think there should be some sensitivity around it, but I think there should be some sensitivity around anybody who's in any sort of addiction.
Yeah.
But I think you're referring to food addiction and weight shaming and things like that.
Like, if someone was drinking to him, which you have no problem saying, you'd want to cut that drink on the head, but you'd never turn around and someone say, your habits are a bit off there, which I failed.
Yeah.
I think they would, though. People have done that in the past. Like, I don't know if it's in the past. Maybe it's not as prevalent anymore, but people would say it, like, you know, if one of your mates was putting on a few pounds, you'd be like, oh, you cut out the cheeseburgers there, you know, like, or you might pass a comment on it. But I think in terms of anything, any kind of addiction, anything that people are doing, instead of looking at them and like blaming them or taking the piss out of them, it's maybe a question of why. Mm. Why are they, and trying to understand why they're doing it, what it is that they feel that they need to do that, and see if you can help them or be there for them. And people only change when they want to.
Yeah, I do agree though, to a certain extent. Like, I don't think I would be like that with a lot of people.
You might not.
Yeah, no, but like, I don't, because like, I feel like I'm very honest, especially with people close to me.
Yeah.
And like, if I did see, because like, I have conversations with the boys all the time about that drug use, or that, like you're saying. But like, I have friends who put on weight as well, and I haven't said it to them, and I've been thinking it.
Because you're very like, how do I approach this?
Yeah, I don't know how to say that. Like, but I do think there needs to be sensitivity around shaming anybody or anything.
Of course,
that you said earlier on, where you were weighing your one on, what was that?
Victoria Beckham.
Like, that is just madness. Like,
that was just
so common. Yeah,
it was just common. Yeah. It was just normal.
That
was like
happening. Like, isn't
and we thought that was okay.
Yeah,
it was totally acceptable to do that. Or like, I remember watching America's Next Top Model, and there was a girl who was a UK size 8 to 10, and they were asking her how does she feel about being a plus size model. And I was like, what? Like. Yeah. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it's very complicated though when you think about it. I remember it was an Adele. Adele got a lot of backlash over losing weight.
Yeah, because you're kind of damned sometimes if you do and you're damned if you don't.
And then like, Lizzo is like starting to lose weight as well because like there's this body positivity movement.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, it's great. And don't get me wrong, you shouldn't be going around shaming people. That's not what I meant by that. But like, you shouldn't be going around shaming people. But I think a serious conversation needs to be had about health benefits.
Yeah.
And especially now, I seen something the other day, Ireland has the second highest obesity rate in the EU.
Wow.
So there should be conversations about that.
I think it's about education as well. I think it's about education of like of the general population as to, you know, like what we're eating and like how, like the long-term effects of it as well. But you can never shame somebody into changing.
No, they won't, yeah.
It's never going to happen. In fact, it's probably going to make
push
it...
Push them the other way, yeah.
Push them the other way.
Same in
addiction.
Addiction or anything, yeah.
That's the underlying conversation really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Essentially, like that's, you kicked us off with that you had a food addiction.
I had a food addiction.
Yeah.
Somebody is not 23 stone because they're lazy.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's not laziness that makes people overweight. It is a form of addiction and to treat it this similar as you would in any addiction. And the thing as well about food addiction is you have to eat to live.
Yeah.
So you have to keep consuming the thing that you're addicted to in order to function as a human being. So it's finding ways to do that. So it can be very nuanced. There'd be foods that I, at the time, wasn't able to consume because I had to cut them out because they were triggers for me. But they're now kind of, I wouldn't really have anything that would be a trigger for me. But it's finding ways to deal with it, to the nuances of nothing is black and white. I think that's the, not one size is going to fit all.
Exactly, yeah. It's... Well, very complex.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
It's something that I think people need to kind of get their head around is the scales. When you step on a scale, you're on a program or you're in the gym for so long, you step on the scales and it's going not the way you want it to go. We need to realise your body is changing and you could be holding water, you could be building muscle mass.
You could just need a giant shite.
Yeah.
There's so much that that your body will do. Your body doesn't, like, in body sims you do weigh in Wednesday. I also, like, on the weight loss Instagram community, which is massive, there's weigh-in Wednesdays. Like, that's the thing. Your body doesn't know it's Wednesday and that it's supposed to, like, kick off 4 pounds today or half a pound or a kate, whatever it is. It doesn't know that. Like, there's women, we've got, like, hormonal cycles, so we literally retain water for weeks, like, can be up to 2 weeks. You know, I actually stopped weighing myself weekly and started weighing myself daily. And I don't recommend it for everybody, but I realized what I was doing was getting a dopamine hit if I was having a big weight loss per week. And I was getting really pissed off or depressed if I was having a bad week, if I put on weight or I maintained or I didn't get what I thought I deserved. So I started weighing myself daily to see it as data, because then it was just a number, because it is just a number. But it's how that number relates to your life.
Yeah,
that's what the difference is. It's, you know, like, it's all the things that you can do, like getting into a size 10 or 12, you know, like going into Zara and being able to buy something in Zara. That's a thing. It's a thing for women. You know, like wanting to buy a certain type of jean, like Levi's 501s is a huge one now that people want to get into. You know, it's just like those little things. Mm. Or being able to run around with your kids, you know, being able to run up a hill with your kids, being able to play football, being able to go on the beach and not feeling bad about yourself. And nobody should feel bad about themselves and nobody needs to, no matter what size they are, but that's how you feel. Like, I'd be lying if I'd say that, you know, people don't feel bad on the beach. Like, we all can have our insecurities no matter what size we are, but just being able to just live a little bit more of a free life. One of the really weird outcomes of weight loss that I was not expecting was that I got taller because my bones weren't... I have two theories.
I never heard that in my life.
Now, I'm not saying like I grew by like, you know, 5 inches or anything like that. It was like, it was by a centimeter or so. But it's because you're... What?
Yeah.
Are you trying...
Come on now. Body slaves. 6'1" next week.
That's not how it works.
Okay. Yeah.
I have two theories.
People weighing themselves like, no, measure me.
No, measure me. My taller.
Yeah. Just a little chat here, that's all I want.
It's because there's two theories I have. One is that my spine wasn't so compacted, so that I was able to elongate my body properly now and hold myself. The other is that because my arse was so big before, when you were standing up against the wall, that I would be bent backwards. Because my arse would be like a buffer, so it'd be going down.
Right. So these are theories now.
They're theories.
Right.
I don't know what the
science behind it.
I don't know the science behind it. I didn't do the preliminary tests on
because
it.
Because you get you're taller in the morning because you have to be lying down.
Oh yeah,
because at home and your spine is
decompressed.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, but that's what I feel like it is because my body was like. Have you ever put on a weighted vest?
Yeah.
Like a proper weighted vest. I tried to put on, I think it was a third of my weight loss.
When you were talking about losing weight, I always think about giving him a jockey back and be like, fuck that.
That's it. That's literally, imagine carrying him around constantly with you. The impact on your knees, that him, sorry, we're talking about Terrence and just like, our man over there in the corner.
Yeah.
Like carrying him around, like all over your body, the impact on your knees, your neck, your back, your chest, like lying down to sitting up. Or standing up is just a massive, like one of the things, you know, I was saying about stuff that's so much easier now that I didn't even realize it was hard, is getting up off the ground. That is mental. Just like, you know, the way you just get up off the ground. That wasn't a thing. Like it would be an effort. It would be a groan. It would be a huge thing that I would have to do. Like, and in dancing, we're constantly up and down off the fucking ground. I wouldn't have been able, there are women who can do it. I wouldn't have been able to do it as easily as I am now. There's sometimes where I can't be bothered, but you know, like, you can feel it. It's that impact. Imagine, try carrying him around for 5 minutes and see how you get on.
Yeah, it's an amazing story.
Yeah, this has been, I don't know what the word is. I really had to enjoy this.
Thank you.
No, like I've been betting to this. When you went out to go to the toilet, she's like, is everything all right? I goes, if we're quiet, it's a good sign that we're all right.
Oh, yeah, because you can't shore those up.
Yeah. And half of Carla is
with a C.
People still are okay.
Yeah.
Half of Carla on Instagram with a C is your Instagram username. So
or YouTube.
Or YouTube.
Yeah. Well,
you've started a podcast to go aloud.
I have. It's called The Imperfectionist. Goes out every Tuesday.
What's the idea behind it?
So I, with the negative self-talk, I didn't understand that anybody else ever thought badly about themselves. I thought that everybody who was successful in life got there because, you know, they were impenetrable and they, you know, they didn't have any issues with themselves. And the more that I did some personal development and looked into myself, and I realized, no, everybody actually has, you know, self-doubts and they have things that they limiting beliefs. And I wanted to speak to other people because I talk so much about myself. I mean, it might be nice to actually chat to somebody else, other people who are successful, and chat about what it is that they go through and how they've pushed through their limiting beliefs to get to where they are. And maybe also in the, for balance, to see where they're not pushing through, where they still have life-limiting beliefs, where they still have self-doubt. So that was the premise behind it. And I think I always used to think that you had to do everything perfectly. Like everything, if you didn't do it perfectly, it wasn't worth doing. So that's kind of where the imperfectionist came from, which is allowing yourself to be imperfect, because nobody's perfect, and take down this idea that everybody is perfect, or people who are famous or people who are successful are these kind of gods or, you know, goddesses. They are just regular, normal people like us all here, and we all have issues, and just opening a conversation for a common humanity.
Brilliant.
You also have another thing coming up. This goes out on Thursday, by the way. So
it does go out on Thursday. I don't know if I can say it yet fully. So there will be an announcement. So I've taken over Body Slims as the head of Body Slims from...
I wonder why you were plugging the light now.
Pluggity plug.
Body Slims is the best.
I do it anyway. I'll always smoke body. But yeah, I'll be taking it over. And so I'll be the head coach for the next cycle.
That's amazing.
Thank you.
That is amazing. Honestly, it really is.
It's bizarre coming
it
from...
It must be.
Their biggest loser, like the person who had the most weight to lose at the start and then now taking it over, is mental.
I'm trying to think of stuff that we haven't plugged that you need to plug now, but I think we're at the doing it
all. Are we plugged at all?
Yeah.
Look at plug.
Yeah, you're right. You're dead.
So yeah, Instagram, half of Carla, YouTube, half of Carla, The Imperfectionist, Go Loud podcast, and Body Slims.
Right.
And before we wrap up, a big shout out to our sponsor, FBT.
FBT gyms are the best in the business, giving you so much more than your average gym.
Join us in a supportive environment dedicated to helping you achieve your fitness goals with locations in Swords, Keulock, Drogheda and now Tallaght.
Whether you're a beginner or a seasoned athlete, FBT provide the resources, motivation and expertise to empower your fitness journey. Unleash your potential at FBT Gyms for only €44 a month with no contract and full class access. Sign up now at fbtgyms.ie today.
Brilliant.
Sorry.
Thanks, guys.
Well done. All right, take us out, Siobhan.
Boom.
Talking Bollocks with FBT Gyms. Unleash your fitness potential with no contract and full class access. fbtgyms.ie.
Go loud. Sounds better with us.
Subscribe to this podcast for free on the Go Loud app.
What you waiting for? Put your back in it. Just a little more. Throw your weight in it now. Fill your body up. Work it hard and long. When you finish that.
The hip knocker.
Go down. Go down. Go down. Go down.